think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. This is minute 15.
Part man.
Part machine.
All pod.
This minute begins with Murphy saying, okay, I get a kick out of it, and ends with him locking and loading, and the radio says, back up ETA. Yep.
Yeah, we're finally getting some big action scenes.
Shit is going down.
I know, it's funny when I say that, because, like, this is the first real big action sequence, and we've had a lot of gunplay, technically, but this is...
Inappropriate gunplay. That could be the title of this episode if we did have titles for episodes, I feel like.
Maybe we should do that in the future. We just have subtitles. Like, yeah.
Minute 15, inappropriate gunplay.
Do I have to insert the ding?
Yes.
I honestly don't really have that much to say. I think all my stuff is going to be in the next minute or two. But I would love to hear your thoughts on this first. Maybe I can cultivate some of my own from it.
It's just, again, just little character beats and small details that let us know who these characters are and what they're about. So when they hear over the police radio that there's a robbery underway, Lewis immediately throws her coffee away, jumps into that driver's seat, and then Murphy's a little slower, like, oh, okay, I'll let you drive, I guess.
He does say something, and I've repeated that little bit of dialogue. I've tried to, you know, ramp up the volume or try to enhance it. He does say something, but I just cannot catch it. But it sounds like he's about to say something really deadly serious. And then he just, as soon as he sees Lewis jump in the car, he kind of just smirks and goes, oh, I guess it's your turn to drive. You know, it's just...
Is there anything in the subtitles?
Don't have the subtitles encoded, and
oh, okay, I'll have a look.
You've got to dig out the DVD to find it.
Why are you using a DVD?
Because I encoded it from a DVD, and I put the DVD back in a shelf somewhere.
No, but don't you have the file?
I didn't encode subtitles. My ripper couldn't do it.
It's so ancient.
I know. I'm an old man. I'm not the old man, but I'm just a old man.
And that's what he says. He hears the woman on the radio say 211 in progress, and he's like, oh, well, that's for... And then he's obviously going to say what that code is for. Yeah, well, there you are.
Yeah, it's barely audible. Like, I think it's the problem is that your focus is attention on the radio, and I don't know. I don't know if that's a gaffe that was in the script, or it doesn't seem to be in the novelization, so I just don't know.
It is spooky how much they look alike. I'm just looking at them now.
Again, the whole mirroring and twinning aspects to this. Unless we can sit down and talk to Verhoeven himself, like, we're probably never going to know. But it does feel deliberate. Like,
Oh, absolutely.
It's too much of a coincidence to not be just merely that.
I could just go on for days about Lewis and just how great of a character she is. That her gender does not matter at all. Like, there are some characters where, oh, you know, she's the strong female character, but you're very aware of that. She's very deliberately the female character. She's the girl on the team.
Yeah.
I was, as much as I love Black Widow, she's often that.
Yeah.
Whereas Lewis, no. It's just Lewis, man.
It's always weird because there's that thing, like the classic Joss Whedon thing of, when are you going to stop writing strong female characters? And his retort was, when you stop asking me. I know Whedon's problematic and there's a whole lot of shit regarding him, but as a statement, yeah, that kind of says a lot.
Yeah, it's almost like, it's kind of a hangover from the 90s still that, oh, now we're going to do the strong girl power characters and...
Oh. Whedon's problem is the waifs that are gods, like Manic Pixie Dream Girl, something else, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
River from Firefly is essentially that trope distilled.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Or at least in Serenity, I never really watched Lord Firefly, I just didn't get into it.
I love Firefly. I even had a Firefly party, and we all dressed up, it was great, yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing there's a lot of washing afterwards. Yeah, I did enjoy the few episodes of Firefly I saw.
It's great.
And I did enjoy Serenity. The sad thing is, like, when I watch Serenity, I'm like going, this is what the prequel should have been? Like, not necessarily the story, I think, but how it was produced and how it was cinematically and how it was practical and had a good story flow and characters you liked and no whiny Anakin.
Yes.
when we're recording this, there's been a whole load of Disney announcements, and apparently the Obi-Wan one's going ahead, and apparently Hayden Christensen is back as Darth Vader.
Hayden Christensen.
I can never remember how to pronounce it. I've heard Christensen, I've heard Christensen, I've heard...
Really? I've never heard anyone say Christensen.
I have. I don't know. If he can let us know, you know, deep personal friend of the show.
Yeah. Who the hell is saying Christensen?
I don't know. I think I heard it back when the time he was doing Jumper, like in the press for that.
That's weird.
I don't know. I'm obviously that big a fan.
Yeah. But... I'm not hearing any Tron in those announcements. I'm very, very upset.
No. We definitely have to make our own by now, I think. Because Legacy's just had a 10-year anniversary?
Yeah, this year. And I'm doing the Legacy Minute podcast in commemoration of that. And also, Duncan, Ultronologically Speaking, and I are doing Animatronic, which is where we review Tron Uprising. And we're just at a point now where we're going to make a Twitter account, and we're just going to, you know, like the Seinfeld Twitter account, where it's just synopsises for episodes as if the show had never ended.
No, but I like the idea, and because I was never a fan of Seinfeld.
No, I wasn't a fan of Seinfeld either, but I do love the Twitter account. It's called Seinfeld 2000, Seinfeld Current. Anyway, we're doing that with Tron Uprising. We're making a season 2 and just coming with new plots.
Yeah, I was going to make a joke about the lasting legacy, not having one, but it's a bit too late now. Sorry, just kind of... railroading us back into talking about RoboCop.
Yeah.
Ann Lewis is never brought up as one of those strong female character archetypes. And I think I've talked about this. We have talked about this in previous minutes. But it is kind of funny that she is legitimately badass and she deserves a lot more recognition. And in this, she shows that she takes the initiative before Murphy does, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And she's still, like, a very, you know, nice person. Like, she's not, I'm a hard ass and I don't like people.
Yeah, it's pretty much since Alien and Terminator, we've been writing all these Ripley clones, just not those kind of Ripley clones. And Sarah Connor clones. And that's just, yeah, we've been using that same template where, you know, men can be lots of different things.
Yeah.
Although I will say in video games, generally not. Most male protagonists in games are kind of the same.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, they're basically brown head.
6 foot tall, broad chests, fucking jacked, you know, yeah, brown hair.
Yeah, well, there's two lines of thought when it comes to game design, especially when it comes to character, or at least playable character design. And it's either two things. It's either a character that's developed, you know, with a personality and stuff like that, you know, they're few and far between nowadays, because now the idea now is we want the player to have an avatar so they live through the experience.
Yeah, well, I prefer like a Nathan Drake, you know?
Yeah, and it's actually getting ridiculous now that you're just not getting great characters. Mm. And so I just recently played through Control by Remedy.
Yeah.
One of my favorite studios. They make flawed masterpieces. They make some brilliant games, but they're always kind of fucked in one way. And I love him and I hate him for it. But the current protagonist of this game, Control, is Jessie Faden, who is a woman.
Mm.
She has basically a very generic identity to a certain degree, but the character is very intriguing. She's got a hidden past, you know, it's something you have to discover. She's given powers throughout it. It's not like a sudden power, but she's independently strong, but she's not super powerful.
Mm.
It's a really well-balanced character, but at the same time, it does feel like it's written by a bunch of men.
Yep.
Also, not overly sexualized.
Oh, that's good.
There's always going to be an ass shot because it's a third-person camera move, so yes. It's just one of those things that, you know, sometimes the camera goes crazy and you get... but beyond that...
I definitely didn't trigger that on purpose in Mass Effect.
Oh, yeah, I mean... So, yeah, they've just announced a new Mass Effect game. It's like, do we need another one? unless it's got the original design team in there, which I don't think exists anymore.
Mm. Anyway, we're getting way off topic.
Way off topic. But we are talking about robots. Oh, actually, we're talking about female protagonists.
I should have like an audio drop of stay on target, stay on target.
Stay on target.
You are just a tangent king.
I love my tangents though. I love, because I think part of my goal with the podcast is to be interesting. And if we can speak about interesting things, that's interesting.
That's very deep.
Yeah.
Really makes you think.
Well, I was talking about how game companies tend to sterilize their main characters because they think it's better to have a character you can just jump into and bring your own life experiences into rather than actually having a character, especially a character like Lewis.
Mm.
You don't see those characters. That's the sad thing.
And then we get our introduction to Bodica, and he's just like a bat out of hell. They do not mess around with character introductions here where... Yep. It's just, it's everything you need to know about this character in a few seconds. He's just,
exactly.
He's kicking the crap out of the driver in the most comical way.
You burned the fucking money!
And there is that, yeah. Just punching the other guy with the money.
It's weird to think about, because he was, you know, mentioned earlier, and he has technically been a presence in this backstory, like the whole... Everything behind what's been happening in Detroit is essentially caused by... Well, the criminal stuff is caused by Brodica, but yeah, it's kind of weird that his entry is not grand. He's just committed another crime.
Yeah, it's in media res, sort of.
Hmm. And yet his presence automatically shines through, you know? They've just stolen all this money, and his first reaction is, you fucked it up.
That's something about a well-made movie that I love, is just how efficient film storytelling has to be, and TV's like that to a degree. Well, not so much now, because they can tell one story over a season, but, you know, looking at pre-streaming TV shows, that it can just get so much across so efficiently. And as someone, I'm getting to know my own writing style, and I definitely don't mess around. I really want to get to the point. And I mean, there are good things about a slow story, but how someone tells a story efficiently is something that is masterful and fascinating to me.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's, again, this is one of the reasons why I like comparing this to the reboot to a certain degree. Is you can just see how the same story plays out in two different ways, and it seems like half the criticism of Gaslighting is, and we're not going there yet, don't worry, is pretty much how badly paced out that movie was.
Oh, absolutely.
How much they just inserted so much fluff that just didn't need to be there.
It reminds me a lot of the Ghost in the Shell remake. There's a lot in... I don't know why, just every time I review Gaslighting Robocop, I do think of that Ghost in the Shell movie of just, you know, great visuals, great concept, and yet it just sort of doesn't go anywhere, nothing happens.
Does seem to be the problem with a lot of modern day Hollywood writing. It's always that thing of, I've been trying to pass it, but I just don't know what they're thinking. It's because in some ways storytelling nowadays is streamlined as much as possible, but then it just adds so much fluff, and it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, they cut out the fat in the wrong places. They're accidentally cutting out muscle and adding more fat in.
Yeah, just dealing with the remake of this movie, we had that whole scene is set in the Middle East. That is really good.
Mm.
But it serves zero function
except
to set up a premise that is really weak and so contrived that it just makes you go, what was the point?
I don't have anything against longer movies. You know, there are some movies that are 2 and 3 hours long when you go, oh, wow, that was it really that long? But
those also tend to flow better, so you don't feel the stretching of time, whereas a movie that drags and you're just there going, fucking hell, how long has this been? It feels like 2 hours. 40 minutes? What the hell?
Yeah, it almost feels like the runtime is dictated before the script is even written.
Yeah, yeah.
That must be the case now.
There is some truth to that. There's this whole idea that studios want to essentially maximize cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they want to make a two-hour movie. Well, it used to be the average was, like, say, 75 to 90-minute movies.
Yeah.
Like, this one is, I believe, like, 78-something minutes with plus credits. And the remake is 93-something plus credits.
Mm.
Just off the top of my head. So essentially, you got 20 minutes worth of added story, but it drags because you don't need it. And yet, something like, say, Avengers Endgame is a 3.5 hour movie, but that I never watched that and felt time was dragging.
Yeah.
I've watched Batman 5 Superman several times, and my God, every single time I'm like going, when will they actually do something? I remember in the cinema, I just shouted out at one point, get on with it. And I'm not joking. I was just
bored. Did anyone react?
No, I think everyone else was bored senseless too.
Probably asleep. Yeah.
I was sitting in the front row as well. I hated my life.
Front rows are worse.
Oh, I don't mind the front row, but Jesus, that experience was... Ugh.
So that's my notes for minute 15.
Oh, wow, this is going to be a short episode, so go like, subscribe.
With a lot to come still.
Do we want to do a reading of the novelization?
Yeah.
So the main question I would like to ask is, would you like to be Murphy or would you like to be Lewis?
Obviously Lewis.
Okay. I don't know. It's, do you want to be the hero or do you want to be the badass? I was giving you the choice. Murphy shrugged. Okay, so I get a kick out of it too. Lewis eyed her new partner.
Married man, huh?
Yeah.
Happily?
Murphy thought for a moment. Yeah, I suppose.
You suppose?
Well, I am happy. Lucky too. I mean, I have a family to come home to the end of the day, right? A little antidote for the insanity. But sometimes you just get so tired.
Physically or mentally?
Murphy sipped the coffee. I wake up tired, Lewis. I've been a cop all my life. I came into the job wanting to save the world.
Make the streets safe for the good folk.
Lewis nodded. Something like that. But you know, the longer you're at this, the more it grinds you down. You find yourself treading water. Hoping to get through each day in one piece. Hoping you won't have to drill anyone.
I know.
Lewis said.
I do know. Imagine what it's like being single. I come home every night to a cat.
You like cats?
I hate cats.
Murphy chuckled. Masochism 24 hours a day, huh? Lewis drained her cup.
I figure I'm on a roll.
I wanted a dog once. My wife didn't go for the idea. My son didn't go for the idea. Nobody wanted to walk him. We end up getting a fish.
Fish are nice.
Lewis pointed out. Ever try to teach a fish how to be loyal?
They must be a bitch to paper train, too.
Lewis smiled. Murphy grinned back. Lewis had a nice smile. A sudden thought occurred to Murphy. Hey, I'll be right back. I've got to call my wife.
I don't think so.
Lewis replied, turning her head towards the car's dash. A beep toe shrieked. Dash lit up. Yeah, this is pretty much... They get the rest of the call out.
That was fun, though. We should do that more
often. So, this is what I was saying earlier about, like, in the movie, there's no sexual tension or anything between the two of them, which I think is really good.
Yes.
But in the novelization, the author, again, I'm not sure how much of this was in the original script, but the author seems to be layering it there a little bit.
Yeah, this is a little suggestion of maybe some chemistry, which is just, I think that's typical novelization stuff. I've read a lot of novelizations, and it just seems to be the default thing for novelizationists of just how attractive is the woman, how can we objectify her, how can we imply this feelings between the two leads.
Yeah, and sometimes then there's also the, how much can we hyper up the manliness of the man-man as well sometimes? And I still think my favorite trope was from the Mortal Kombat novelization where the author couldn't really do anything with the main Mortal Kombat character, so he just made the side character who Johnny Cage's friend is, just made him like the biggest hero ever. It's like, what?
That's so bizarre.
No, it's brilliant. Until he dies, he's like the big hero of the book. Anyway, I do have some commentary notes.
Oh, yeah.
First off, Verhoeven actually states that before he did this movie, he had no idea how to do special effects in a movie. He credits John Davison for assembling the special effects team, who in turn helped him work in a way to include special effects, I guess is probably the best way to say it. Which I guess makes a lot of sense when, you know... He was like a European director. He was doing a lot of dramas and stuff before this. And now he's doing a movie with, you know, walking chicken robots and a guy in a tin suit. And there's explosions and blood and This has got to be a hard movie to direct if you don't have any experience in that.
Yeah, it surprises me that I actually often get directors who maybe if they've just done some indie dramas and stuff, and then they'll be hired to do, I don't know, like a Marvel movie, science fiction movie. It's just why?
I was just thinking that myself. Like, I get Kenneth Branagh being tapped for Thor because they wanted to add a lot of Shakespearean kind of depth and like grandiosity or whatever to it, and getting a somewhat respectable director in doesn't hurt any credibility to taking this shit seriously, because Thor is pretty silly.
Yeah, I guess, you know, Scott Derrickson did horror and then he did Doctor Strange, but it wasn't it was just not great anyway. Horror and Doctor Strange would have been beautiful.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the next one.
I hope so.
I am looking forward to that, but I'm mostly looking forward to just Sam Raimi getting another chance at doing some superhero wackiness.
Yeah, not to tangent too much, but I loved the Doctor Strange comics growing up as a kid, and I did find them scary. There is something very, like, existential horror, cosmic horror. Love it. It's H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah, and that was something that was sorely needed in the MCU, and glad they brought it in. But yeah, because there's another one. I'm trying to think which director it was. Maybe it could be Taika Waititi. I don't think he actually ever directed. Yeah, I think he never directed a major special effects movie before Thor Ragnarok, because it was like,
What We Do in the Shadows was as close as he got.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But even then, that wasn't really massively special effects heavy.
And that's what I'm saying, is that's the most special effects any of his films ever had.
I still haven't seen Boy. I've been trying to track down a copy of that.
You know what? It's not that amazing if you've seen everything else. Like, it's very much, it's fledgling, it's everything, you know, everything you've come to know and love about Taika 1.0.
Yeah. After watching, like, Search for the World of People?
Yes, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, that's amazing. And one of my all-time favorite movies is Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah.
All movies about family. Funny that. Or at least found family.
Love it.
I'm trying to direct this back into RoboCop, but I guess Murphy and Lewis are their own found family.
Could be, yeah.
Brother, sister?
I would have loved if their relationship was explored more in the sequels, but, well.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, we'll get to them one day.
Hmm.
When we do another 60 Seconds to Comply, doing RoboCop 2.
I think we'll have to, but I just realized she does a bit, Lewis does a bit of a Kira Nerys from DS.
Well, shit. It's exactly what I was hoping to spare you from.
Anyway, starts off with the real short hair, then has the bob.
Yeah.
It's like the rules, I guess.
Yeah, that's where I also, like, I've mentioned it before. I think there's that thing where they were trying to deliberately resexualize Lewis as a character. I think they even hint at in RoboCop 3 that, you know, there was supposed to be this thing between the two of them, and then again, they also killed her off, and...
I wish there was a thing between the Lewis and Murphy in the remake.
It would have been amazing if there was.
Yeah.
Get some of that queer baiting in there before Lewis is killed off screen.
Yeah, he does not come back. I don't know. I don't give a shit, but I don't think he does.
Yeah, we'll tackle that when we finally get to it, because I don't recall him being in anything other than... He gets hospitalized, and then I think there's a mob hit. I can't remember if it succeeds or not.
And my brain has basically made that Next Town Baby scene from Iron Man canonical in my head.
Maybe that should be the sequel to the RoboCop reboot, is the Lewis RoboCop reboot, and that way we don't have to deal with Rick Flag.
Yeah.
So I got one more note before we talk about the gaslighting. So Ed Neumeier recounts I bring this up because it's got one of the funniest lines in the commentary. He was working with a prop master to burn the money in the truck because he was hanging around and said he had nothing to do. So he's like, any jobs? Yep, come help me burn this money. As he was doing this, John Davison, the producer, walks past and says, there's the writer burning my income. And on that note...
Love it.
Do we have to?
I think we do. Like, we're legally obligated at this point.
I didn't sign anything. Then again, I started this shit.
Yeah.
The gaslighting of RoboCop. Insert drop here.
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
This minute begins with Murphy calling for an ambulance, ends with Raymond Sellers about to explain to Senator Dreyfus why he's wrong. Yep.
Yeah.
But I will say, this is the first minute where we've got anything to really discuss, and there's a bit of a philosophical debate going on here. So,
before we do that, because this is going to lead on perfectly into this, so my line is, the irony of the senator talking about robots having emotions and understanding the value of human life.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody else does.
Dreyfus says, I don't care how sophisticated these machines are, Mr. Sellers. A machine does not know how what makes it... Take it from the... Can't talk again.
Look, I'm going to keep all this in because I don't mind if you mangle this dialogue.
Who gives a shit? Okay, so Dreyfus says, I don't care how sophisticated these machines are, Mr. Sellers. A machine does not know what it feels like to be human. It can't understand the value of human life. Why should it be allowed to take one? To legislate over life and death, we need people who understand right from wrong. What do your machines feel?
They feel fine, Dr. Morton.
And it's just kind of ironic. It's coming from a politician, so...
Yeah, exactly! What the hell does a senator know about these things?
I think this kind of argument has probably aged like milk, especially now given 2020, the world's gone to shit, yes. Police brutality, overthrow the government.
Where Mitch McConnell is currently, who is the leader of the Senate, is currently blocking the surplus packages for poor and low-income households and small businesses because he's a scumbag who hates the poor and just wants to bleed everyone for all they're worth.
I hate this argument that, well, we can't trust AI to run our governments and make decisions for us. They're machines. They're dangerous. Like, you're giving the power over to fucking sociopaths, but robots who have no personal biases or ambitions, those are dangerous.
I kind of laughed out loud when, like, you know, when it says Senator Dreyfus and he's talking about human emotion and empathy and... I'm like going, you're a senator. You don't have those.
Yeah, he knows what they are in the abstract, but not in...
Are we sure he's not a robot? He's just talking from experience.
True, maybe. Maybe he knows. He knows too well. But...
Oh, I do have another note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, talking about emotions, Rick Flagg has two of them. Sad and pissy.
Yeah, basically. And the sad thing is, though, that emotional arguments like this will generally always be more effective than reason and logic and statistics. Yep. So I can imagine, you know, the average person at home watching this would be like, yeah, you know, that's robots are evil. They could, you know, Terminator. I've seen Terminator. I don't want that.
That's it. It's you've got essentially several generations. Oh, now at least, say what, from 1980. God, what year was RoboCop? 85? No,
87.
RoboCop, no, Terminator was like 80.
Oh, Terminator.
83 or 85?
Yeah.
But yeah, you've essentially got like 30 years between Terminator and RoboCop remake where most of the media is like, you know, robot bad girl.
Isn't it funny though that in the Mad Max world, it doesn't seem like robots had anything to do with that, does it?
Well, I guess probably stemming from the fact that practically all electronics is just does not work and like.
Oh no, I'm just saying like they're not implying there's a robot. There was no robot apocalypse. There's no, you know, husks of exoskeletons or anything anywhere. No,
it's pretty much a ecological disaster. Mm. If even going back as far as like the second movie, because they really don't discuss it in the first one.
Yeah, my read was always that it was global warming, climate change, whatever.
Yeah,
and yeah, I feel like it's gonna be human folly that is the downfall of humanity. Nothing to do with artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if anything, I think probably the Animatrix got it right. You know, it's the fact of like mankind developed robots as servants. They started to evolve, you know, almost like the Geth in Mass Effect.
Where, Mass Effect.
You get this hyper-intelligent robot race that are semi-connected to each other and acting like individual members, acting like a neuron for a whole, and then they just get like hyper-smart hyper-quickly. And what does their masters do? We've got to oppress the slaves, and we can't oppress the slaves. We've got to try and wipe them out. And they just went, nah, bitch, slap.
Hmm.
I can't think of the race now. The Quarians
yeah.
were not the good people in that. You know, yeah, they got decimated. They live on a flotilla, but like, no, they weren't good.
I do like that there are so many shades of gray in Mass Effect, and yeah. it's a shame we don't have more things like that.
I want a Mass Effect, like, Netflix-type series. Long form, tell some great stories within the universe, stop trying to compress it down to, like, 90 minutes, and get some great storytelling out there.
I think in this story that Raymond Sellers has potential to be a fairly nuanced character. He's not inherently evil.
No, he's just a capitalist, which is the same thing.
It's the same thing. Yeah, but yeah, I guess that's what I was getting at is, why does he have to be outright villainous of, oh, we're going to take this guy and we're going to fuck him up and we're going to turn him into a robot and remove his rights and I don't care about if there's a person inside. Yeah, no, you don't even have to go that far. You can be way more subtle and nuanced with it.
I think it's one of those things that when we get closer to more of the Michael Keaton minutes, like, it's definitely something I'll have to discuss in depth, but just thinking about it just then, it feels to me like Robocop was a critique. It maybe not started off as a critique, but it definitely ended up as a critique, especially of capitalism. OCP is satire, it's commentary.
Yeah, they're not outright villainous. I love the way that all those characters at Omnicorp are presented.
Yeah.
That they do just seem like capitalists.
Yeah.
But there is that sort of, yeah, comedic, satirical edge to it, like Bob Morton being just like, well, that's life in the big city, after a guy's gunned to death.
Even Don Johnson, that's never going to not be funny. He's a very sympathetic character, but even he's still complicit in some of this shit.
Mm.
And yeah, Bob is our protagonist against Dick Jones, but he's still an asshole. And I get if Ed Neumeier and Michael Miner were trying to update Robocop and say, hey, let's just point the finger at a Steve Jobs and critique the Steve Jobs. But it's still not handled that well.
This shouldn't be this difficult, guys.
I know, Steve Jobs is an asshole. This shouldn't be hard.
I can't believe they made, I think they made two biopics about him.
Yeah, I haven't watched them because, yeah, I'm not interested in the
no,
guy.
No, not at all. I don't want to know about some freaking capitalist sociopath. And even though I like Michael Fassbender,
I just realized the modern-day version is Elon Musk. And he is, like, two steps away from being full supervillain. Let's be honest.
Yeah. He could go either way, I feel like, you know, roll the dice. Is he Tony Stark? Is he Lex Luthor? Could go either way.
No, he's definitely more of a Lex Luthor because, well, his background is very shady.
Oh, really?
It's called emerald mining. I love that he's recently moved, in heavy quotation marks, to Texas to avoid avoid some taxes, even though he's not physically moved his location. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of shit they could have put the Robocop remake. That's, I guess, what we come back to over and over again is there was so much you could have done. It's the same thing with Tron Legacy, actually, where these are movies that are very much about technology. Technology has changed a lot since the 80s. Culture has changed. There is a lot you could say about all of this stuff, and we get none of that in Tron Legacy or the Robocop remake.
It's almost like these two things are really primed to... I don't know. Part of me is like, you dropped the ball. You really just dropped this ball.
Mm.
And I bet you thought we was going to go this entire episode without mentioning Star Trek.
Oh, well, I already did.
Oh, we've mentioned Star Trek. We have no connection to Star Trek in, at least at the current time, in the main movie.
Mm.
However, Senator, what's his face? Who I just keep forgetting his name. Cause
Dreyfus.
That's it. Senator Dreyfus was in Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh.
Yeah.
No wonder I don't recognize him. I never watched it. Never will.
He's one of those that guys. I was saying, I recognize his face. I've seen him in so much different stuff. And I was there going, I wonder if he's in Enterprise. I wonder if he's in Star Trek. Yeah, he played a character called Renth in the episode The Catwalk. But it's a season 2 episode, but I've not seen anything. He's not in Loaf by the preview picture I'm seeing right now, so... But yeah, he's just one of those guys that is in like so much different stuff. Like he's a that guy on TV. His credits are like numerous, and he's still working today.
I was thinking about the scene in Iron Man 2, the Ayn Randian Iron Man movie. that when he's in the Senate hearing, I think he's less justified than Raymond Sellers is.
Yeah. I think the problem with Iron Man 2 is that it's the framing is this whole thing of like, the government's argument is that only the government are capable of like acquiring weapons of mass destruction because they're going to use it responsibly. And if there's anything the US government has ever shown, that's probably not true. But at the same time, like Tony Stark amassing a personal arsenal.
Yeah.
Not good.
Well, we saw what happened with Ultron and basically actually every movie. He creates his own villains.
I still think that's actually one of the best things about Age of Ultron is this kind of Tony Stark's ego and hubris kind of coming back to bite him on the ass. And it pretty much sets up the entirety of like the Phase 3 arc. You know, it's just Tony's just having to deal with the fallout of his fuck-upness.
I like to believe that Ultron is still alive because he got into the internet. So that's basically game over, man. There is... You don't come back from that. So he's just biding his time. He's just consuming memes.
I think that's why they had to have that scene with Vision explicitly stating that this is the last one.
Yeah.
There is no other copy of Ultron because we don't have Wi-Fi in Romania or wherever it was.
Yeah, apparently. Or it's Ultron, but from the first time he was activated, so then you just go through the whole thing all over again.
Come on, this is Stark. He's got to have a backup somewhere.
Yes, bring back Ultron. He was one of the best villains. I mean, fucking Thanos gets 6 goddamn movies or whatever the shit. I don't know. No, Ultron was the best.
Technically, he only got 2.
Whatever.
He was hinted at.
Well, they go for 6 hours total, so that's like 6 movies.
That's like, you know, 3.5 80s movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I should just do some mental math. Like, that's almost correct.
No. Yeah, whatever. I don't do math. I'll trust you.
90 minutes, 6... Yeah, I'll just say I'm correct, and I think it's actually more closer to 4. Yeah, closer to 4. I think I'm spent.
I was already tired before we started recording, so...
It's all right if it's not going to be an hour long. You know, it saves me editing, but...
Yeah.
I think that about wraps it up.
I think that about covers it, yeah.
Yes. Would you like to tell the dear viewers where to find you?
You can find me at travandesigns.com, TRAVAAN, or the Alien Prequels Facebook page. There's also patreon.com/travandesigns, where you can get advanced episodes of Covenant Minute and Legacy Minute.
All the minutes.
All the minutes.
All of them.
And Animatronic should be coming out soon enough, and that's, as I've mentioned before, reviewing Tron Uprising, an underrated show.
Actually, is Tron Uprising available anywhere? Because I have no idea.
It is on Disney Plus. That's why we're kind of hyping it right now. Yeah. If we get enough people watching it, maybe Disney will notice.
Yeah, this one tiny little podcast just spawns the Tron Renaissance.
Yes. I mean, the Tron fandom is very small, so you know we all know each other.
I guess if you're so inclined, you can. Catch me at...
Catch me outside.
Yeah, how about that? Oh, God. why did I have to follow that?
Yeah, you knew it. You had to participate.
And you can find me, for now, at Fanboy Crossing, where I do Kung Pao End in the Minutes vlogs and stuff like that. You can check out this and my other podcast at Simplecast. Apple, Google, and Spotify. I have like Patreon and shit, but who cares about that? Please share this content. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. Keep safe. This year's almost over. 1 week to go. Jesus, end already. Until next time.
Oh, Robocock.